And welcome to I Hate James Dobson, a podcast dedicated to therapist-on-therapist violence. And by violence, I mean talking shit and dropping names.
That's the one.
Hey, everybody. The episode that you're about to hear went super long. Apparently, Brooke and I have a lot of thoughts about Dobson's views on women. So I've decided to split this episode into two parts, with part two releasing in 2 weeks. But I also wanted to take a moment and thank you all for the incredible reception we've had. It's been amazing to connect with all of you, and my heart is warmed knowing that my little project is resonating. It makes me feel a little bit less alone. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope to see you on the next one, and please, take care of yourselves. Welcome to I Hate James Dobson. As always, I am Jake, a marriage and family therapist, and I'm joined by the brilliant and beguiling Brooke. Brooke, how are you?
I'm doing good. I like that. Brilliant and beguiling.
We love alliteration.
Yeah, we do.
Brooke, how are you since last we spoke about Dobson?
Oh, well, great. I had Thanksgiving since then, and I've been able to drown away my sorrows in a bucket of gravy and turkey, and it's been fine. I don't even remember anything of that horrifying event.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we are starting with a recap.
Great. Great. Thanks, Jake. Appreciate it.
Do you remember anything from last time?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you remember?
It's seared in there forever. Lots of parenting advice about toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
Spankings.
Mm-hmm.
Insolent, disrespectful toddlers that are challenging your authority.
On purpose.
On purpose. Yep. And, wasn't there a part where we were spanking some teenagers?
Not spanking, but inflicting physical pain, yes.
Yeah, okay.
You shouldn't spank teenagers because it hurts their feelings.
Oh. That's right. Some interesting gender things about, like, the boys and the girls and the moms and the dads. Mm-hmm. And I think just a lot of spanking last time. It was dare to discipline, right?
A lot of spanking. Yes, it was.
Ow! Oh, I can't wait to find out what the name of today's book is.
It's a doozy. So I want to start with Dare to Discipline for a number of reasons. Firstly, it was his first book. But I also think it's a great case study for the slipperiness of his language. Discipline is good, but punishment is bad, and spanking is good in this way, and that's just not how it works. He creates such an absurd kind of closed-off category to say this is what good spanking is that just is not reflective of real life. But it gets him to claim plausible deniability when people otherwise physically abuse their children. I also don't think I impressed enough of how bad a writer James Dobson is.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about his writing, and I read some quotes, but he's just not a good writer.
No.
I think he's trying to be folksy, but he ends up just being an asshole. Like, he shits on kids all over the book. We talked about that. I think he's trying to sympathize with overwhelmed parents by being like, yeah, aren't kids terrible? And being a parent is overwhelming. I get it. Yeah, sure. But you can do that without the punchline being, so then I hit them and they sure learned their lesson. The other thing that I don't think I mentioned is there's a part where he just outright rejects any scientific research saying that spanking is bad. He claims it's because this research doesn't give enough nuance and they're not measuring good spanking or bad spanking. It's mixed together. And like I said, that creates a level of plausible deniability for him so he can write off anything that's bad as unrelated to good spanking. It allows him to sidestep any culpability in the proven, consistent, and pervasive consequences of spanking, including the kinds that he advocates for. That's what that slipperiness of language gets at. Brooke, how many copies do you think Dare to Discipline sold?
Tell me again what year this was.
1971.
Oh, yeah. I would say lots.
That is correct.
Yeah.
3.5 million copies.
Whoa.
And is in the Library of Congress.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of people still have this book in their homes.
A lot of people do. A lot of people did. A lot of people, even parenting experts, quote-unquote experts today were influenced by it and continue to be influenced by it, whether they know it's directly from that or not.
Wow.
Passed down the pipeline, yeah. Today's book has sold about 2 million copies, so it's a little bit less popular.
Uh-huh.
My goodness, that's so hard to say.
You got this.
After Dare to Discipline...
Ow! Leave that whole thing in.
Absolutely. Made an indelible skid mark on the underwear of parenting advice.
Jake.
Dobson had become a celebrity. He was booked for speaking engagements. He appeared on trashy TV shows representing the evangelical viewpoints, often opposite feminists.
Oh, yeah.
Very much like a Jerry Springer, like, let's see these two duel it out. And by God, did he completely buy into his bullshit. In his third book, because we're skipping the second one.
Oh, we are?
Yeah. I didn't realize this wasn't his second book when I started reading it. And then the second one's also about parenting advice. And I'm very tired of hearing Dobson talk about parenting right now. He turns his brand of nuance, compassion, and scientific understanding into one of the most complicated and difficult subjects in the world. Dobson is here to help all of us understand a topic that has been an enigma since time immemorial. Women.
Oh no, not women.
Today we are talking about the Feminist Manifesto. What wives wish their husbands knew about women.
Oh my God, I cannot wait. It's really called What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew... What is it? I can't see it.
Knew About Women.
What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most convoluted title I've ever heard.
Yeah. It's... The abbreviation that I have for this is WWWTHKAW, which is not really an abbreviation either.
I like the idea of say like putting the emphasis on the wrong word, like what wives? What wives wish their husbands knew what women.
I'm so glad to have you, Brooke, on this podcast because you are an expert in women.
Could see your little shitty grin right then as you said that. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
This book was published in 1975, 2 years before Focus on the Family, FOTF, was formally created.
FOTF.
The last time we explored Dobson's hierarchy of parents and children, today we're going to be talking about the hierarchy within the parental system.
I'm already so angry, and nothing's even happened yet.
What are Dobson's qualifications to talk about women?
Zero.
Well, no, he is married to one. He's a counselor, so he's talked to at least 5 women. And also, and this is a true anecdote that he tells in this story, one time his wife broke her leg, so he had to take care of his son for one morning. Well, he tried, and then he had to ask his wife to take over for him anyway, because he got overwhelmed.
Oh my God!
That is a real story he tells without the faintest bit of irony. That literally as a way to be like, I get how hard being a mom can be, because I had to do it for one morning, and I couldn't even
count. One morning?
Yeah.
Jake, am I being punished for something?
You're being punished for being my friend.
Can you put more whiskey in this cup before we talk about women? You did not tell me that today we were going to be talking about women.
Feminism. He hates feminism, I think, unsurprisingly.
Oh, and this was right during the time of, like, Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Very, like, second wave feminism.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not a great time for feminism in some cases.
No, but, oh, my God.
An important time. We should still, like, read and understand them, but Dobson has a lot of ammo to kind of just twist a lot of stuff.
Sure.
This book is structured around a list of 10 problems facing women. Brooke. As a woman person, what are women's problems? More scientifically.
Men.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Jake. Okay, well.
So it's a top 10 list. So please keep your answer to a cute 10 item listicle that can be absorbed by men without feeling too critiqued.
Yeah, okay. So, what was the question again? Why do women want to fucking kill men? Is that, what was it?
What are women's problems?
Oh!
Like, same question, really.
What are women's problems? Okay, Number one, men. Number two, fear of men.
Okay.
Number three, patriarchy in general. Number four, violence caused by men. Number five, I don't know, like, never finding the right shoe size when you're trying to get new shoes. I guess that's like a
so hard. They never have they never have heels in my
shoes. They just never have half sizes, you know what I mean? Why can't they, each shoe have a different size? Just general malaise. Periods, unequal pain support in the medical field, all the isms.
I'd say it's like 10.
Phobia. I would say and then like getting your beach body.
I just started losing those last 5 pounds. Is so two of those actually are on his list.
Shoe shopping?
No, surprisingly. You said general malaise. I put fatigue.
Oh, fatigue. Yeah.
And then, believe it or not, menstrual and physiological problems is on his list.
Duh. I know that this bitch is going to talk about periods. I just want everyone to know that Jake gave me a little whiskey before the podcast today, so, and didn't tell me it was going to be about women. When this motherfucker starts talking about periods, I'm gonna lose my mind.
It's actually, that part is not as bad as you might think.
All right, good.
It's generally not offensive, although also it's a lot of like, yeah, what? Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay. It's still offensive.
Yeah. I mean, everything Dobson does is. The 10 problems that he lists: low self-esteem.
Oh my God.
Fatigue. Yeah. Time pressure.
Yeah.
Loneliness, isolation, and boredom as one.
Okay.
Absence of romantic love in my marriage.
Wrong. Well, complicated.
Financial difficulties.
True.
Sexual problems in marriage. Menstrual and physiological problems.
Mm.
Problems with children.
Yeah.
And problems with the in-laws.
The top 10 biggest problems in a woman's life. And problems with the in-laws is on there?
Yes. We'll talk more about this kind of at the end as we kind of analyze this as a whole text. But
really quickly, yeah. I'm going to have a lot to say this time. So this isn't really like top 10 problems for women.
Mm.
This is top 10 problems for wives.
So that's what I want, one of the things I want to talk about. He uses wives, women, and housewife interchangeably.
Right.
And you'll find me, because it gets so tricky to, as you're writing and reading and absorbing, you'll find me kind of alternate between them. And that's not a reflection of my personal values. I'll try to be as distinct as I can. But that's just so soaked into the language of what Dobson is saying. He cannot really fathom. He doesn't want to talk to women who are not wives.
Right. There's no such thing. Like, what's the purpose of that woman?
Mm-hmm. I also want you to keep in mind, in the back of your head, who's the audience for this? Who is he writing for? Keep that in mind.
Okay.
So let's talk about how Dobson created this list. He rejects science, as we talked about just a second ago, and the scientific method, because the scientific method requires humility and the ability to say, I was wrong, or be critiqued by your peers, and Dobson doesn't want that. So he started just from counseling and listening to women's stories and listening to the wives in his church. And then he, in his speaking engagements, handed out a list to say, rank your top 10 problems. And he somehow got to this list and this order. We don't know anything about his sample size. We don't know anything about his
methodology. It was the church wives.
Yeah, it was church wives at conferences that James Dobson spoke at. So, right. Like, an incredibly self-selecting sample.
Sure.
But number one, according to this list and his flawed methods, is self-esteem. According to him, this is the number one issue that women report, wives report issues with.
Okay.
Quote, even in seemingly healthy and happily married young women, personal inferiority and self-doubt cut the deepest. Again, we're finding ideas of inferiority. This is back to this Adlerian kind of view. We have to overcome our sense of inferiority that we talked about in the very first episode and kind of the overview of his beliefs. This comes back all the time, both in explicit ways like this and implicit ways. Another note, he's an insufferable writer here. He says, in writing this chapter, that a woman in the library came up to him and said, I've been trying to find your book because I've heard it deals with self-esteem. I am constantly depressed over my own inadequacy, and I hoped I could find help in your writings.
Oh my god.
No human person talks like that.
No!
That's not how people speak.
No.
And also his god complex is so strong. My writings have helped countless women. He's just sucking his own dick.
Yeah.
And trying to pass it off like a folksy and
no one else is sucking.
Dobson says that women are depressed because we do not value housewives, which is the role that women were born to do.
Oh, God.
Quote, this disease of an inferiority has reached epidemic proportions among females. Also, side note, anytime a man says females is very creepy vibes. Epidemic proportions among females, particularly at this time in our history. Their traditional responsibilities have become matters of disrespect and ridicule. Raising children and maintaining a home hold little social status in most areas of the country, and women who are cast into that role often look at themselves with unconcealed disenchantment. Militant feminists mock women who want to be housewives. Patriarchy is ordained by God, and therefore women are most fulfilled when they are housewives, is kind of the takeaway of his.
Thanks, James.
Yeah.
It's possible that the women have self-esteem because they are constantly being told that the only thing they're built for is to be a housewife.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay.
And also, I think there's a lot of critiques of capitalism to be made for why not being a mom and joining the workforce is also unfulfilling, yeah. Right? But you not feeling fulfilled or feeling overwhelmed or whatever about being a mom is also okay, and feeling like this isn't what I wanted to do with my life is also a common experience for people, even if they think they want to be moms.
Right.
Life is hard and messy and complicated.
Yeah.
It's not because we denigrate them. There is something to be said about denigration of women's work generally.
Right.
None of these are arguments that Dobson makes here. Here he also correctly asserts there's no significant difference in intelligence between men and women. Good.
All right, thanks.
Despite this fact, women are much more inclined to doubt their own mental capacity than are men. Why? I don't know. You're so close, dude! You're so... Could it be that you explicitly tell women that they are inferior to men, subservient to them, that men are the head of the household, and therefore they get the final say in every decision, that all these factors tell women that they aren't as smart as men? Nah.
No.
Who knows?
That's not it.
Women are crazy.
Yeah, it's their periods.
He talks about how militant feminists are angry because they're projecting their inborn sense of inferiority onto men and then erroneously blaming those men. Not because patriarchy is incredibly oppressive and treats women as second-class citizens, objects, and ornaments for men. No, it's because they're projecting their own sense of inferiority.
It's interesting that he refers to them as militant so frequently, right? Military, this man's role, right? Mm. So that puts them in this threatening position for men. It's really, like, his slippery language, like you said, is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And they're acting masculine. They're acting outside of their assigned role.
Right.
How dare they?
And if women are acting masculine, that's a threat to men.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Everyone is angry these days, says James Dobson. Quote, whether it be the Black Civil Rights Advocate, or the Jewish Defense League, or the Gay Liberation Movement, or Veterans Against the War, or the 8th grade class of Woodrow Wilson Junior High School, everyone is mad at somebody.
Oh my god.
So dismissive.
He compares the entire Black Civil Rights Movement to an 8th grade class
mm-hmm.
of whiny junior high kids.
They're just complaining.
Everybody's mad.
There's so much tone policing here, right? And this is unsurprising, given all of his beliefs. But even last time with talking about their yeah. college kids who were having problems with their schools, and he said, whatever they said doesn't matter. It's how they said it. And we're not going to hear them if we're not going to say it in a nice way. What? This is kind of like a trite talking point in social justice circles, I suppose. But, like, it's not up to the person being oppressed to be nice about asking for what they need.
Right.
And equal rights.
I just wanted to say something in case it wasn't clear. I really hate James Dobson.
I hate James Dobson. With a passion.
I hate him so much. All right, keep going.
Quote, if women genuinely respected their roles as wives and mothers, they would not need to abandon it for something better. If they felt equal to men in personal worth, they would not need to be equivalent to men in responsibility. Basically, if we value the roles of wives and mothers, then women won't have yeah. to like look for jobs for personal fulfillment. I kind of agree with that. Kind of. Definitely not in the way that Dobson means it. But no. Again, we devalue women's work, traditionally women's
yes.
work.
Yes.
And I do think that if we treated that with more value, more people would feel more fulfilled generally. But it's not about forcing women into any one role. It's saying you should feel a sense of worth regardless of what you do with your life.
I think if we treated women with more value in general, regardless of whatever they're doing, they would be happier and feel more fulfilled. I don't think it's about, like, treating wives who want to stay home with their children better. I mean, certainly that is one group of women, but, like, let's treat all women better. They'll all feel more fulfilled. Because they're equal.
So, the problem identified is low self-esteem. The way to fix it, we should just be nicer to wives. We should value them more. Men should be kinder to their wives.
Okay.
Issue number two, fatigue and time pressure. Dobson has three ideas for men to try and understand about women here.
Wonderful.
Being a mom is a tough job, and it makes sense that women are exhausted by it. Let your wife vent to you and praise her for keeping your home in order. Item two, women can understandably get overwhelmed by keeping your home in order. And three...
Your home.
That is my words, but that's very much the vibe from this. And number three, husbands and wives should constantly guard against the scourge of overcommitment. That's his advice. Men, understand being a mom is tough. And also don't...
Let that bitch vent it out. Woof.
So, let's get into those points a little bit more. The first one, let your wife vent and praise her for keeping your home in order. Quote, For some strange women, human beings, and particularly women, tolerate stress and pressure much more easily if at least one other person knows that they are enduring it. This is highly relevant to housewives. The frustrations of raising small children and handling domestic duties would be much more manageable if their husbands acted like they comprehended it at all. Everyone needs to know that he's respected for the way that he meets his responsibilities. Husbands get this emotional nutrients through job promotions, raises in pay, and annual evaluations, and incidental praise during his workday. Women at home get it from their husbands, if they get it at all.
Or other meddling hens down the street, gossiping and buying their Mary Kay products.
Dobson also, throughout this, does not really differentiate between socialization and, like, inherent biological traits.
Mm.
And so, a feminist could have written most of this as well, but taking it from, like, a social critique, women feel so isolated, especially housewives feel so isolated that they can only get praise from their husband.
And, I mean, that is what you've pointed out before is the tricky thing about Dobson. It's like, he's not actually wrong about that. Like, yes, it is isolating for anyone who stays home with children all day or stays home all day, right? Even, I think we've learned it through the pandemic, like, working from home by yourself all day, it's isolating, right? And he's also right that, like, I'll say women, but people who stay home with their children, yeah, they don't get raises, they don't get incidental praise. Like, that's all true. And that's why he is so tricky, right? Because you're nodding along, being like, yeah, right. But then it's like, oh, then there's that peace that comes right at the end.
Yeah, it's the gender essentialism.
Right.
It's not that this is how we've structured our society and could structure it differently and better. It's this is how women are, period, inherently. And also because of the hierarchy that we've been talking about, this is how women should be.
Yeah.
If you're trying to find validation from outside sources, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
It's gross.
But it'll all be okay if she's just allowed to vent a little bit.
Just a little bit. And pretend like you understand, even if you don't.
You don't even really have to listen.
Point number two, women can understandably get overwhelmed by keeping your house in order. Quote, most women will agree that the daily tasks of running a household can be managed. It is the accumulating project that break their backs. Periodically, someone has to clean the stove and the refrigerator, or replace the shelf paper, or wax the floors, or clean the windows. These kinds of cyclical responsibilities are always waiting in line for the attention of a busy mother and prevent her from ever feeling caught up. It is my belief that most families can afford to hire outside help to handle these projects.
Oh.
So that is his solution to this. It's overwhelming to run a house. Again, that is a true thing.
Yep.
His solution is hire somebody. Okay. I don't know that that'd be necessarily my first place to go, but I'm not mad at it.
I'm not mad at it, but it is a privileged position.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think we know now that that's just not realistic for most people.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay.
My first line of thought would be, hey, husband, help out with some of those things. Yeah. And again, not everyone has the privilege, and there's extenuating circumstances, sure, but my first thought would not be get outside help.
And I think one thing, unless he addresses it, that he's forgetting is that, like, men are off the clock at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock at night. Mm. Women continue to take care of the home and be a mother 24 hours a day.
Even and especially if there's women are working and men are staying at home, there's something in feminist literature called the second shift, where women will get home, assume the job of mothers and housewives, right. And then that becomes their job, and then they don't really get time off.
Right.
He also says, quote, "It is my belief that a housewife will do a more efficient job in running a house and be a better mother if she can share the load with someone else occasionally. More explicitly, I feel like she should get out of the house completely for one day a week, doing something for the sheer enjoyment. This seems important to the happiness of the home, more important to the happiness of the home, rather than buying new drapes or a power saw for dad." And that part feels bad.
He's saying a woman should be allowed out of the house one day a week and could do whatever she wants. She gets one day off.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like that it's she'll be more efficient at doing her job. Yeah. That feels dehumanizing to me.
It's like taking the car for a tune-up.
Yeah. Okay, so I read this next part, and I was on a spiral for days about this part. So step one, identifying the problem correctly. Running a house for anyone is overwhelming. There's a lot to do, sure. Solution, hire somebody. Okay, not the worst solution in the world. Feels kind of small and narrow. Here's how he suggests that women go out and get help.
I can't wait.
Quote, "But how can middle-class families afford house cleaning and babysitting services in these inflationary days? It can best be accomplished by using competent high school students instead of older adults. I would suggest that a call be placed to the counseling office of the nearest senior high school. Tell the counselor that you need a mature third-year student to do some cleaning. Do not reveal that you are looking for a regular employee. When the referred girl arrives, try her out for a day and see how she handles the responsibility."
The girl.
Yeah. "Trick a high school student into performing free or incredibly cheap labor for you."
Imagine this in 2023. Imagine I call a high school at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and call the counseling office and say, "Hi, could you send me a junior to clean my house? Could I please order your most competent junior high school student?"
Your most competent.
Girl, please.
Girl. It's wild to me that his first answer to being running a home is hard is
trick a child
into performing free labor for you.
Trick a girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, the man shouldn't have much to do with it. It's the woman who should make the calls and screen them and vet them.
Of course. More work for her.
We get the return of weirdly placed Q&As at the end of each chapter.
Yeah, I like that those. Are
tangentially related. He says women shouldn't get jobs, especially before their kids are in preschool, because they simply won't have the time to handle raising kids and working.
Right.
Again, the idea of a dad pitching in is not even considered. No. You can let your kids be raised by babysitters or even worse, quote, government-operated childcare facilities. He really hates the idea of, quote, government-run childcare facilities.
Oh, interesting.
Which is really interesting to me because I think government-subsidized childcare is actually a really good thing. Not just for stay-at-home moms or parents, but just kind of generally.
Well, he doesn't like it because it threatens the role of the woman, right? And mm-hmm. allows her to go to work.
Absolutely. He does say, you don't have to have kids.
What?
Has a little nicety in there. My strong criticism is not with those who choose non-family lifestyles for themselves. Rather, it is aimed at those who abandon their parental responsibilities after the choice has been made.
Oh.
Which, okay, that's better than it could be, I suppose. Again, with the slippery language, though, non-family lifestyles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two married people are a family. A really tight group of friends can be a chosen family. This is something that queer spaces have known forever.
Right.
Nope, that's non-family. Family is a nuclear family.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. I wonder why that's okay with him.
I don't think it really is.
No.
I think it's just kind of paying lip service to be like, my focus is this. I'm not really talking about you over here.
Okay.
I think he has his own criticisms of those who choose to forgo having children.
Uh-huh.
But also, again, not gay people who adopt kids. That's bad. Number 3 and 4 were tied, according to Dobson. Loneliness, isolation, and boredom as one. Tied with absence of romantic love in my marriage.
Mm.
Dobson takes this and extrapolates it to say women are saying to him, I don't like myself. I have no meaningful relationships outside of my home. And I'm not even close to the man I love. Quote, feelings of self-worth and acceptance, which provide the cornerstone of healthy personalities, can only be attained from one source. Self-esteem is only generated by what we see reflected about ourselves in the eyes of other people. I don't actually know how to feel about that point. I think I disagree, but I'm really interested in hearing your perspective of that.
I want you to say it again.
Yeah. Self-esteem is only generated by what we see reflected about ourselves in the eyes of other people.
False.
Tell me more.
I think self-esteem can be affected by how we see ourselves through the eyes of other people, for sure. I don't think it is only affected by that.
I would say significantly.
Yeah.
Depending on the person and the context, probably a lot, but...
Yeah. But I think it is possible to certainly have low self-esteem, even when surrounded by people who think highly of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And in my coming out, my coming out was actually an act of loving myself.
Mm-hmm.
No one around me particularly liked me at that time.
No.
My self-esteem got better when I surrounded myself with people who liked me and celebrated me and accepted me. But it wasn't... The hardest part for me coming out when my self-esteem was the lowest was before that, when I was in the church, when theoretically people liked me.
Right.
6 reasons why women are isolated. Again, just according to Dobson, not according to, like, anything else.
Well, reason number one, he thinks they should only be allowed out of the house one day a week. Like a zoo animal.
Kind of. Small children isolate a mother.
That is true.
Yeah. Society is not built with small kids in mind. I think that's a real critique.
Yep.
He takes it to a weird and creepy place, though, as we've come to expect from Jimmy Dobbs. Women are trained to see everyone as a kid. And then he tells the story of a mom going out for a fancy dinner for the first time in a while and being seated next to some, like, president of her husband's company. And she realized, quote, with dismay that throughout their entire conversation, she had been dutifully cutting the president of her husband's company.
Is that true?
His food and wiping his mouth with her napkin.
No, that's...
I suppose you could call this a homemaker's occupational hazard. Dobson, what the fuck?
First of all, that did not ever happen.
That's just a parable.
That is also, like, I'm sorry because I'm going to use this word, but, like, that is, like, psychotic. Like, if you were out to dinner and someone started cutting up your meat and wiping your face, that is not because, oh, she's a mom. That's because she needs some immediate mental health care. Like, that never happened.
Yeah, and also the president of the company just sitting there and taking it the whole time. I mean, excuse me, what the fuck, personal space?
I mean, that is, like, the wildest... I knew you were going to say it, too. I was like, it's going to be cutting up the meat.
Yeah!
Ew, Jimmy!
Ugh. Reason number 2 that women are isolated. Women are mean to each other.
Oh, come on.
Which, okay.
All right.
Sure.
Yes. But that is... That is totally designed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because women are fighting to get to the top of the patriarchy. Women... Well, let me clarify. White women.
A lot, yeah.
View themselves as second, right? They're this close. And they want to align with number one, men, right? And when they can align with number one, then they are that much closer to the top. And to align with men is to hate women.
Mm-hmm.
It's men who hate women. It's men who are mean to women. And women model this to try to stay near the top.
Reason number 3, women are isolated. Feelings of inferiority serve to isolate women from each other. Take the gendered component out of that. Okay. If we're accepting this kind of model of Adlerian psychology, inferiority, that can make sense. Inferiority causes isolation, and isolation causes inferiority. That can be a significant feedback loop. Don't know why we need to make it gendered, but sure. Number 4, fatigue and time pressure isolate mothers. Sure. Okay. 5, financial limitations. He doesn't have a lot to... Those are also chapters in here, so he doesn't have a lot to say about them.
But that's also just people.
Yeah.
Like, financial concerns isolate people.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, you are... Yes.
Including wives and mothers, but also all people.
There's so much of this where I'm like, that's a fine point. Why is this gendered? Why is this about... Whatever.
Yeah.
And this one... This one's my favorite. Women are less successful in finding outside interest and activities than are their masculine counterparts.
Well, I would 100% agree when they are only allowed out of the house one day a week and when they are expected to be at home. What is he talking about?
Oh, I have quotes. Quote, men love sporting events and draw great enthusiasm from following the games. Women do not. Men like to hunt and fish and hike in the wilderness. Women stay at home and wait for them. Men like to build and fix things and work in the garage. Women remain inside, washing the dishes. Men usually lack the time to pursue all their varied interests, while wives may find it difficult to generate much genuine enthusiasm for anything.
Okay.
I suspect that the cultural influences of early childhood stamp a certain passivity on little girls, constricting their field of interests. Come back to that in just one second. For proof of this fact, listen to the conversations of the women next time you are at your social gathering. The feminine discussion will probably center around children, cosmetics, and other people's behaviors. The men will talk about a much greater variety of topics.
Oh. How does he know this?
Because he's listened to women in...
Let me tell you. I'm not going to tell you. But when a bunch of women get together and start talking, it's not about cosmetics.
That's what I was thinking. Like, Dobson, you've clearly never heard... You've never been friends with any woman, if that's your experience of women.
That is for sure not... I mean, we might also talk about cosmetics, but that is not what's going down.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
I want to go back to, I suspect the cultural influence of early childhood stamp a certain passivity on little girls. That's the patriarchy. Yeah. That is sexism. Yes. You are so close, Dobson.
Everything he says is exactly right until it goes,
meh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's right. It does. I talk about this with my clients all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, where did you first learn this? It was when you were a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have been submersed in this your entire life. So, of course, you can't break out of this easily.
The lack of intellectual curiosity on behalf of Dobson is astounding to me. Literally, all you have to ask is, why?
Right.
What is that passivity? Why does that happen? Why does it happen to girls? And then you get into actual feminist critiques of this. He's so disinterested in that.
Right.
Categorically incapable of it. So those are six reasons why women feel isolated from the world.
Uh-huh.
He then goes in to talk about emotional differences between men and women in this. Men derive self-esteem from being respected. Women feel worthy when they are loved. This may be the most important personality distinction between the sexes.
Do you not need to be loved? Do I not need to be respected?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, why is there this, why is it one thing?
There were no citations for this obviously fake fact. I was told this. This was something that my dad told me and my older brother while we were being raised about the differences between men and women.
Really?
Men need to be respected. Women need to be loved. That's actually a pretty, like, common, when you're talking about gender centralism in evangelical spaces, that's one of the, like, go-to things. And your critique is absolutely correct. Men also need to feel loved. Women also need to feel respected.
Right.
These are just universal human needs.
Yeah, and then what also gets tricky is that men then feel they are entitled to respect.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And that love is a gift.
And that love is a gift.
I'm being kind to you by showing you love.
Yes.
Continue.
Yes. No, that's it. And women have to fight for love, right? Mm-hmm. And I think then that we also get into, like, well, whatever. But I think there's an idea that, like, sex is love, right? Or, like, all the... whatever.
There's a whole chapter about sex. We're going to... Get into it.
I hate him so much. I hate him.
It's going to be gross.
I hate him. Ew, he's going to talk about sex. Mm. Is that happening tonight?
Oh, yeah. With a lot of detail.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay.
We're going to talk more about this at the end as well, but he does not paint men in a particularly good light. This is kind of a summary of what he says, but men view marriage as a business agreement that includes sex. Women need romance in relationships. Men would be totally fine if there's no romance as long as they get a fuck. But I guess women with their needs need romance and softness, I guess.
That's so interesting. I have found that quite a few men need romance.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's been a number of times where I'm writing this where I will be like starting my rebuttal. And I'm like, well, one, I'm gay. And two, I'm not technically a man. So right. I guess he's not writing about me. But again, this idea of not only are these universal truths, according to Dobson, they're also aspirational.
Right.
If as a man, you feel like you need more love, maybe you're just being a bit of a pussy. And if women are demanding respect, they need to stay in their fucking lane.
Militant.
Yeah, then they're being militant.
Yeah. Interesting.
After correctly identifying problems that some women face, he explains how patriarchy can fix loneliness by creating more romantic love in the relationship. A man...
Patriarchy as romance.
Yeah. This is good. A man as the head of the household must do more to show his wife love. Not make meaningful relationships outside of the marriage. He just needs to say nicer things to her more often. Quote, it is clear that the husbands bear the initial responsibility for correcting the problem. This obligation is implicit in the role of leadership assigned to males.
Oh.
After taking a short detour to talk shit about polyamory, Dobson gives advice for how women should talk to men. Because yeah,
he talks about polyamory?
Yeah. He hates it. Unsurprisingly. I mean, bleh. There was a book around this time called Open Marriage that I think introduced polyamory into the general populace. And he does not like it. I have not read the book. I cannot critique it. I'm sure it's not great.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But then he gives advice for how women should talk to men. Because men bear the initial responsibility, but women, you need to know how to talk to them. It's your responsibility to
right.
be heard, right?
Right.
Definitely not men's responsibility to listen. First, a woman who wants to reignite the romantic fires in her husband must look for ways to teach him about her needs. Teach, not nag.
I knew it would be all her fucking job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Timing. Select a moment when your husband is typically more responsive and pleasant. Setting. The further you can get him away from home with its cares and genuine stresses, the better your chances will be to achieve genuine communication. And manner. Let it be known that you are attempting to interpret your needs and desires, not his inadequacies and shortcomings.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
This is reminding me of Cosmo magazine in the 90s.
Mm.
Like, big time, right? Like, how to make a man love you.
Mm-hmm. It's right? all your responsibility.
It's all your responsibility. Wear this lipstick. Say these things. Watch him play his video games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell him his dick's big.
Tell him his dick's big. Yeah.
None of these are bad per se, but it's weird that it's only about how women can communicate with their husbands. This book's seemingly written for men. Men are not asked to change here at all, or really ever, other than, quote, be nicer to your wife. That's about the extent of the change, but women have to watch their tone, their manner, their timing, what they say, how they say, make sure they're not nagging, but being affirmative, like all of this, it's all the women's responsibilities. I put this in here just so when we call him a feminist, we know exactly what we're doing. Please do not associate me with those contemporary voices which are mobilizing feminine troops for an all-out sexual combat, which, side note, sounds very fun. Nothing is less attractive to me than an angry woman who's determined to grab her share one way or another. No, the answer is not found in hostile aggression, but in quiet self-respect. And we're all very concerned about being a woman that's attractive to James Dobson.
Oh, God, please. He's interesting the way that he aligns feminists with men.
Mm-hmm.
Like combat and battle and militant and grabbing and taking, right? Like all of the things that he respects in men, mm-hmm. right? That's really interesting. And I hate him so much.
He's the worst.
Yeah, he really is.
And that's where we're going to leave it for today. Be sure to check out part 2 of What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women, the book with the worst name ever, in 2 weeks. You can find the show on TikTok and Instagram at IHateJamesDobson and on Twitter at IHateJDobs. If you're enjoying the show, consider leaving a review or a comment. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon. I Hate James Dobson is a labor of love, written, recorded, edited, and produced by me, Jake, with my amazing co-host, Brooke. Special thanks to Drew, Lindsay, DJ, Jack, and Brooks. Our theme music is by Moonbase, and the song is called Trendsetter. Thank you for enjoying our show.